You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are joined today by a special guest who has been a third Pelton brother in the past and is back to join us. Please welcome in Danny Kelly of The Ringer.
What's going on, guys? What a game, huh?
This is kind of a win that is somber, feels in many ways like a loss because it's overshadowed by Richard Sherman's injury.
It was the kind of win that I immediately got in my car once the game was over and listened to St. Vincent singing about her friend becoming addicted to heroin and then being homeless over and over and over again.
I mean, I feel like that's still worse. That's definitely worse. But the Seahawks did beat the Arizona Cardinals 22-16 on Thursday Night Football earlier this evening. And we thought with Danny's help, we'd go over some of the key plays from this game and then maybe just talk about the general takeaways from this one. So we start in the first quarter where after a punt by the Seahawks has given Arizona extremely good field position early, the Seahawks managed to force an Adrian Peterson fumble recovered by Sheldon Richards. And that kind of set the tone, I think, for how dominant their run defense was against Adrian Peterson in this game. Yeah.
That was a really good sign. I think it was sort of, I don't even really know who caused the fumble. I think Shaq Griffin was in on it. Chancellor and Richardson were all kind of there. And yeah, they were just swarming the whole night. And it is a testament to the Seahawks defense, the run defense, that they did so well, because I think Peterson's actually looked really, really good in two out of the three games that he's played so far. And I was actually listening to the Greg Cosell podcast, the Fantasy Guru podcast today, and he was saying like that Adrian Peterson looked better in this last game than he did in the Buccaneers game early on when he kind of broke out. But he had mentioned that he probably wasn't going to do so well against the Seahawks, and that turned out to be correct. Seahawks have really picked up their run defense.
Right. I mean, this is, you know, a completely different run defense than we saw earlier in the year that was giving up the big plays to Carlos Hyde and DeMarco Murray. And they've completely cut those out, and still all the short and negative yardage plays, those are what's left, basically. Adrian Peterson, 21 carries for 29 yards in this game. And
Seahawks-esque.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, not to jump ahead, but I mean, I was thinking about this play, and this is probably the last that we'll talk about the run defense necessarily, but this play kind of began the game that they would have against Adrian Peterson. And the quote that coming back from halftime when Peterson was at, I think, 11 carries for 22 yards was from Bruce Arians saying that they needed to stick with that offense. And we're like, do that. Please do that. Stick with this offense. Yeah. It didn't work in the first half. We would love to see more of it.
I think we may actually have high-fived.
It was one of the most exciting moments of the game.
Well, another of the most exciting moments in this game as we move ahead at the 5:07 mark of the first quarter, after a solid drive from the Seahawks, Russell Wilson pays it off with a touchdown pass to Jimmy Graham. And we see basically a way to use Jimmy Graham that we haven't seen at any point during his three years in a Seahawks uniform. Danny, you've been a connoisseur of Jimmy Graham red zone touches. What did you think of this one?
Yeah. It's been so funny because it's been bugging the hell out of me for like the last 2 years. Like he was the premier red zone target inside the 10-yard line for like 5 years with the Saints. Like he was the best player inside the 10-yard line. He literally scored the most touchdown of any player in the NFL, had the most targets of any player in the NFL inside the 10-yard line from 2010 to 2014. So it's just been bugging me that with the Seahawks, I think in the first 2 years he was here, and that was only 27 games, I believe, because he missed like six or seven games when he hurt his knee. But still, I think he was only targeted like two times, seven times with two catches inside the 10-yard line in those first 2 years. And we finally kind of seen them figuring out that, hey, like if we get him isolated on a defender, he's really tall and you can throw the ball high and then he can catch it for a touchdown.
It seems so easy when you put it that way.
In this one, it was nice because, it's obviously a little more complex than that. They do have to scheme it up in order to get him one-on-ones. In this case, I just watched it again. They basically had a like trips right with an empty backfield. I think they motioned McKissick out to the left. So Graham was in the slot on the left. McKissick was out wide. I think it was McKissick, whoever it was. And then they had trips on the right. So the Cardinals basically had, it was a zero coverage. They did not have safety over the top. And this is another one of my favorite things is like when Russell Wilson sees zero coverage, like I think his eyes just get so big because he just dominates in that area. And so, you know, when he got that zero coverage, when he knew it was one-on-one, he just lobbed it up and it was easy. That's easy money. And so, yeah, it's awesome to see them finally starting to do that. And they did it again later. We'll talk about that too. But yeah, it's great to see him turning into that red zone target again, because that's, to me, that's why they got him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Especially given what a problem that has been for the Seahawks historically, and it wasn't really for the most part tonight.
Yeah.
It felt like in this game, Jimmy Graham's, I mean, he had an excellent game all around, but also just his ability to go up and get balls in this game felt so much better than it's been throughout the season. You know, in this one, he's going up and getting a contested ball.
Yeah.
He had a couple of other catches that weren't touchdowns, where it's like, Jimmy's making grabs out there.
I mean, I've always been a huge fan of Graham. I think it's been sort of inexplicable to see him have some of the struggles that he's had, like with, you know, just drops. It just seems really in, you know, out of character and not really what you expect from him. So hopefully, you know, people who have, you know, doubted him over the last couple months, hopefully they're kind of getting back on board, because I think he's one of the best. He is honestly one of the best touchdown makers in the NFL. And that's exactly what the Seahawks need. So it's great to see that.
The good news is, of course, that with the trade deadline passed, the Seahawks cannot trade Jimmy Graham.
I know. That's nice. I really do wonder if they ever had any serious discussions about that, but I'm glad it never happened.
All right. So the last play we're going to look at from the first quarter, a crucial one, even though it wasn't necessarily that large in terms of yardage. With 1:13 left in the first quarter, Shaquille Griffin called for pass interference on the third and six, and Arizona gets that conversion, one of, I believe, at least six first downs they picked up via penalty in this game, and goes on to score the tying touchdown after it appeared like they'd been stopped.
Yeah, that was one of the most frustrating plays of the game, I think. I mean, and it's, there was a little bit of contact, I think, right before this, like he made his slant or whatever. And I think you got to let that happen. And obviously, you know, people who would maybe on the outside be listening is like, oh, yeah, a couple of Seahawks fans talking about how they think that corner should be able to hold. But I mean, it was so ticky-tack, incredibly ticky-tack. That was really, really good defense, I think, by Griffin. I don't know, like, what else you want a defender to do. Like, you can't just let him catch the ball. That I just think it was kind of absurd. So, you know, then that kind of just goes along with, I think what I've thought for, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks now is Griffin has been playing really, really well. It really actually made me really nervous when he went out earlier in the game. Obviously, a more important player was lost a little bit later, which we'll get to. But, he's been playing really, really well. It's really encouraging. And, you know, for a rookie, he's super confident. He seems to shake off. Like, obviously he had that, he gave up the big play last week, and it seems like he shook that off pretty well. And I'm really encouraged with how he's played.
Yeah. And then came back and in a crucial play in the second quarter, ended up deflecting away a pretty similar pass to the one on which he'd been beat previously.
Oh, yeah, the one that was like they passed it down. That looked like an OPI, too, like, and they didn't even call that guy for kind of like a late push off, too. So, he's really shown up. I think this kind of just is another sort of an aside, but like the Seahawks really kind of nailed their rookie class. Obviously, we haven't seen Malik McDowell, but
right.
I mean, Griffin, Naz Jones, you know, you go down the line, there's contributors early on, and that's been big for them. I think that it's been really important, and it's been part of the reason that they've won a few games this year is because of the rookie play.
I mean, Chris Carson, even though unfortunately, you know, we're not seeing him anymore. God,
that sucks.
All right, the highlight of the evening for the defense, at the 10:53 mark of the second quarter, Arizona trapped at its own one after a penalty on Justin Bethel called for holding on the Seahawks punt. Adrian Peterson can't get out of the end zone as Cam Chancellor meets him and he goes nowhere. For the second consecutive week, the Seahawks record a safety.
I'm ready for the all safety offense from the Seahawks.
I mean, it was pretty close last week.
Well, Brown is out. Hope that they might need it. Yeah. No, that was a great play too. I think Chancellor, I don't know if they had like a called blitz, like run blitz or what, but like he shot the gap. Like he saw it happening and he took a chance and he, you know, basically shot through one of the gaps while the blocks are happening. No one picked him up and he stonewalled. And then I think someone, I can't remember who it was, someone else came and they basically like combined to like just like stop Peterson in his tracks, and that's not easy. And so that was a really impressive game or play. And so yeah, that was fun. I was just rewatching the replay of that too, and I was like, Sherman was like going crazy and all excited, and I was like, man, this is depressing. This is depressing to watch. But
yes,
yeah.
Well, we've seen so many times players in that situation just getting out of the end zone and to be able to stop Adrian Peterson of all people and not let him get the ball even a little bit out of the end zone so they can call it not a safety was pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah. How many times have we seen like in a short yardage situations, like you get the initial surge and then they like get a second effort and get forward or get the first down or get out of the end zone. So, yeah, that was huge. I mean, and that again, it was another tone setting play. The Seahawks, and I think I said this in the Ringer Slack during the game, it was like the Seahawks dominated that game. Like the score didn't really show it and it was ugly and there was a lot of flags and you know, the injuries were terrible and all this, but like the Seahawks did dominate that game basically from start to finish. And I never really felt like I never really felt like there was any danger they would lose, to be honest with you. It was like kind of one of those games. I'm like, The score is close, but they're dominating.
Yeah, an interesting thing, just looking at the ESPN win probability for this game, is that the Seahawks are not below 50% win probability. The lowest point was, let's see here, 54% when they were leading 9-7 in the second quarter, and Wilson was sacked on 3rd and 18. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. I mean that was, but generally above 60% the entire time. And then, you know, even though Arizona eventually made it a one score game at the end, their win probability never dipped below 90% in the final 20 minutes or so of this game. So,
oh, really?
Or the final quarter.
Yeah, that's about how it felt. One other side. Hey, we got a kicker again.
Oh,
guys.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, anyone was jumpy off the Blair Walsh bandwagon last week. Like, certainly there was some nervousness about will this trigger what happened last year in Minnesota, going back to the miss against the Seahawks in the playoffs 2 years ago. But just stuff happens.
Yep.
Sometimes you miss kicks. You just had a bad day.
I really appreciated listening to Pete Carroll on his Monday morning coaches show. Just when they asked, are you going to bring in kickers today? And he was just like, no. Absolutely not. Did not even leave it open. Didn't question it. Just absolutely not.
You know what? I'm not even going to say something negative about Jim Moore here because I'm past that.
Jim Moore knows what he's done.
And he knows what he's doing now.
Unacceptable.
All right. So a play that was innocuous at the time, but looms large in hindsight, with a little over 2 minutes left in the second quarter, is the Seahawks were marching just after hitting a nice pass up the middle to Vanette. Dwayne Brown comes off the field after getting rolled up on an ankle injury. He would not return to the game. Don't know how serious it's going to be, but certainly a bummer after having, you know, basically a game and a half of getting actual quality left tackle play to then not have it all of a sudden again.
Oh, God. This is like, I don't know why, but I remember having this thought last week when we first traded for him, and I say we, and I mean the Seahawks, but when the Seahawks traded for Brown, I just remember thinking like, I'm so afraid that he's going to get hurt like immediately. Like, why is that my first thought? And he made it a game and a half. No, but I think, I mean, my guess is he's going to be, it's not like a long-term injury. Hopefully, I think, Did someone say like he wanted to go back in the game, but they just held him out? But I don't know if that actually happened. But hopefully it's not like one of those like multi-week high ankle sprains. Hopefully it's just like one of those things. But yeah, God, it's just we can't have nice things. It sucks.
I think the first conclusion a lot of people had this week when Reese Odhiambo went to IR was just the instant Dwayne Brown better not be injured, and then instantly Dwayne Brown is injured.
Of course. I didn't really pay that much attention. Like, I wasn't zeroing in too much on Matt Tobin, but it didn't seem like it went that well. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, so my instincts were, when this happened, that it looked like the offense was much worse after that. My gut feeling was the Seahawks are not scoring for the rest of the game.
You did say that, yes.
Fortunately, they did. I mean, I was looking at it saying, we are going to see a situation at the end of the game where it's a 15-9 game or something, 15-10 game, and Arizona's having to come down and try to score a touchdown to win the game, and it's very stressful. Fortunately, you know, Doug Baldwin made sure that that didn't happen, but...
God. Yeah.
My gut instinct was that it just didn't look good. So I'm curious, Kevin, did you look up statistically how the Seahawks were with Dwayne Brown versus without Dwayne Brown?
So I did. And before he left, Wilson was 12 of 16 for 114 yards. After he left, Wilson was 10 of 16 for 124 yards. Now, the interesting thing is that the vast, vast majority of that post Dwayne Brown yardage came on two big plays that we're going to discuss a little later. Like, the other eight completions went for, I think, 27 yards off the top of my head. But the other thing is, surprisingly, you know, three of the Arizona's five sacks in this game came with Dwayne Brown in there. So it wasn't necessarily, at least in terms of the, you know, sacks aren't exactly always a perfect measure of pressure, but it wasn't necessarily a big difference in that regard.
Where was the pressure coming from? Like Ibushi or I didn't pay close attention to the offensive line in this game. I feel like I've sort of tried to push that out of my brain or something like that. But
yes, I'm going to say I didn't really pay close attention, but I'm going to say it was Jermaine Ifedi.
Well, I mean, it was a lot Chandler Jones, and he was working against Tobin after Brown went out of the game. But yeah, I just, maybe the difference wasn't as dramatic as we perceived it to be.
Yeah, hopefully.
Or hopefully with 10 days off or 11 days off, then he can be back by the time the Seahawks are next in action.
This is one of the situations where, I mean, given all of these injuries, one of the situations where you can be very thankful that they have this kind of mini bye week coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels like people are just have moved on and assume that Dwayne Brown is going to be out against Atlanta. And I would say I wouldn't assume that just yet.
I mean, I think there's a reason we're fatalistic right now.
Right.
All right. So the first of those two big plays I mentioned, a 43-yard completion to Paul Richardson with 46 seconds left in the second quarter. Seahawks get the ball with a good field position late in the first half after Arizona unable to convert on an aggressive, I'd say, fourth. I think it was like fourth and eight that they ended up going for at the Seahawks 38. And immediately the Seahawks get down into field goal range with that deep ball to Paul Richardson. I think we talked about something we talked about on the pod this week was, you know, when that screen flashes to, you know, Wilson loading up to throw deep and then it goes to the receiver and you just assume they're going to be open and that most of the time Wilson is going to hit them. He had the one that he underthrew to, I think, Lockett in the end zone.
Yeah. But
this one was perfect.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture how they set it up. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was another like really nice catch too by Richardson. He just seems to have like one big play. I mean, and now that's kind of been my joke on Twitter, and a lot of people have been like, "Well, it's more like two or three," and it's true. He's actually kind of turning into like this consistent big play guy. It's awesome. I think that's exactly what they wanted him to be when they picked him. Like when you watched him in the Colorado offense. He was their offense, but he was really, really good downfield, you know, just a big play guy. And it's cool to see him sort of turn into that because they really needed it. Honestly, they needed someone else besides Doug to, you know, turn to make those big plays. Lockett, I think, is, I don't know if he's back yet, really, like 100% from what his injury, you know, and we might not see him at full speed until next year, that kind of thing. And so, it's really, really cool to see Richardson step up and all the jokes about his injuries, like, you know, over the years, he's managed to stay healthy, knock on wood, and make some big plays for him.
Yeah, so that play allows the Seahawks to take an 8-point lead, essentially a touchdown lead, but with the safety, it was a 15-7 lead at halftime. So we skip ahead a lot of punts early in the third quarter.
Yes.
So we skip ahead to the 8-11 mark of the third quarter where Seahawks hearts jumped into their throat. Seahawks fans' hearts jumped into their throat because Russell Wilson left to go to the sideline for one play to be evaluated after a late hit by Carlos Dansby for a personal foul.
Were you using air quotes when you said to be evaluated?
Yeah, that's probably fair.
I love the okay, this is, I don't know if this is going to turn into like a controversy, you know, because obviously the whole concussion protocol is a serious thing and it needs to be taken serious. But like, he went into the tent and was like, okay, let's go. And like, literally he said, okay, let's go. Like right after they shut the tent and just left. It was like, they didn't even, no one looked at him. No one, like,
no one looked at him.
It was so stupid. Did you guys see the replay?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It was funny. I mean, it's bad, but it was also kind of funny. It's like, he's like, this is stupid. Why am I here?
It reminds me of the meme of Abe Simpson walking into like the cabaret, putting his hat up, seeing yes. Bart, and then walking immediately out. It was like, that was Russell Wilson in the concussion protocol.
I mean, it did get exactly. looked at between series, but yes, in terms of the whole idea of, you know, the referee forcing the player to the sidelines to prevent, you know, what we saw, I think, most notably in the Super Bowl with Julian Edelman against the Seahawks, where a player play. Yeah, didn't necessarily fully take hold on this one. What was
and
the
then of course what, were you
what was the percentage chance that the Seahawks were going to run during the one play Austin Davis played at quarterback?
What's higher than 100?
I know.
Yeah.
And of course, well, that was Procise, right? And he like got hurt and fumbled on the play, although like he was down. But that was when he hurt his ankle, I think, wasn't it, on that play?
Yeah, and so apparently the other ankle. Yeah.
Oh my
God. The opposite ankle of the one that had been injured.
Oh no.
Man, this sucks. I mean, just as like a guy, I'm sure he's trying as hard as he can to get out there, you know, and like I think his reputation is like maybe beyond repair at this point. Although, I mean, look at what happened with Richardson. Like he was,
right.
You know, he was injured on like, he played like four plays in like 3 years or whatever. And now he's done pretty well. So hopefully, knock on wood, you know, we'll see. Hopefully Procise will be back this year because, I mean, he's looked pretty good in the small amount of times we've seen him, but yeah, it's just not looking good for him.
I think his nickname should be Procise will not return to the game.
You can't see me shaking my head here. So a much more serious injury later in the third quarter is Richard Sherman goes down and hobbles off the field, and NBC shortly thereafter catches him telling people on the sidelines that he had ruptured his Achilles and was done for the season, a preliminary diagnosis that was, of course, confirmed after the game. This is a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, that would, like, honestly, you know, at the beginning, we were joking around about how, like, it's hard to be happy after a win like this because – like, honestly, I was gutted that I feel like I barely paid attention to the site to like after the game, after the Sherman injury, because it was just like so devastating. I mean, he's never missed. I don't think he's missed a game since he started starting for the Seahawks. And he's just been such a huge part of their identity, such a huge part of their personality, like a leader, fiery, you know, he gives them their attitude, their edge, and it's a huge loss. I mean, you know, obviously schematically it's going to be a big loss, but emotionally I think it's huge too. I mean, we saw like those scenes on the sideline where like he's hugging guys, he's hugging Chris Richard, he's hugging Russell Wilson. It's like, man, it really hits home on the sort of the human side of everything, because you kind of just like, oh yeah, the next man up, whatever. But like, man, it sucks so bad for a player. Like, well, not, I mean, it sucks for any player, but like for Richard Sherman, especially just because, I mean, he's put in so much for the team and he's been like such a huge integral piece to their defense for so long. And now his season's over. It's just brutal.
Well, and, you know, I'm concerned even beyond the season, where it's like we have to start looking at it and say, was this the last game that we saw Richard Sherman at the level that he was at? Like, I'm sure he'll come back and play more football, but is Richard Sherman ever going to be the same after this? You know, he's getting older, this major injury, which might take... You know, he might be back at the beginning of next season, but it could be longer. It could be in the next season.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, it might be another full season before Richard Sherman is kind of back to normal again. At that point, we don't even know if he's going to be on the Seahawks anymore.
Yep. And he'll be, you know, if you're talking about two seasons from now, 2019, by that point, he'll be 31. So, you know, certainly past the prime for cornerbacks.
Makes you sad about not paying attention. It's like, you know, it's, I mean, I'm not like, he didn't die obviously, but like, makes you sad about not really paying attention enough to how great he's been this year, because he hasn't been, and it's like been like a quiet good year for him, right? And the last couple of years have been that way because teams just don't really throw at him that much anymore. And so, but he's just like quietly holding down over there, and you just start to take for granted that you have this all pro corner and like an all pro player at one of the most important spots on the field. And, you know, it's just like, damn, like I should have been paying more attention to what he was doing, because now we're not going to be able to see that every week.
I mean, it is going to be somewhat fascinating. Obviously you don't want to do it this way, but to kind of find out what his value is, because there's always been sort of that question about mm-hmm. who's the more important part of the Legion of Boom between Sherman and Earl Thomas, who the Seahawks have, you know, fairly quietly managed to do a good job defensively without him the last couple of weeks, certainly much better than last year. And Bradley McDougald has done what we'd hoped he'd do. But, you know, you could never really say exactly how much Sherman not having him out there would impact the defense, because he's just always been out there.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it was the same deal with Earl until he was out last year and too. And so I don't know. It seems like, and maybe this is just me trying to be like positive or whatever, but it seems like they're set up to be okay. You know, obviously they've got some depth there. It's actually turned out to be a good thing that Jeremy Lane didn't get traded.
Yep.
That fell through. Deshaun Shedd should be coming back pretty soon, and so he's a starter caliber player. I really, again, like I said, I like what Griffin's done a lot. I think he's really good. And I mean, I've kind of thrown it out there a few times, like if they got really desperate, you could always go out and get Byron Maxwell, who I think is still a free agent. He worked out with Atlanta, but I don't think they signed him. And I mean, I don't know if that's a good option at this point anymore, but at one point he was really, really good in this scheme. And so who knows, you know, maybe he'll come in and for depth or something like that. Doesn't sound like he's got a huge market out there. So probably not going to be like a big ticket money guy. So
no,
I don't know. They've got some options. I don't know. I don't think the Seahawks defense will be as good.
Right.
It's kind of the same deal with Earl. Like they're not going to be as good, but hopefully they can kind of figure a way to work around it, to mitigate that loss.
And is the expectation that Jeremy Lane is going to slide in that spot, Justin Coleman will stay in the slot with Shaq Griffin across from Jeremy Lane?
I mean, that's what we saw in this game, yeah. Which fortunately Griffin was able to get back out there. And I feel like he almost played better after Sherman went down in some ways.
Yeah, maybe that's a, you know, they're taking that as a challenge. They've got to step up and all that. And yeah, I love watching Griffin play, man. He's so competitive. He really does remind you of Sherman in a lot of ways, honestly, just the way he plays. Obviously he's got a different like body type. He's not like long and lanky like Sherman. But he's super, super competitive. He seems to always be around the ball. Like, I don't know. He had a couple of pass breakups tonight, and it's like, it's really hard as a corner to like touch the football. Like, honestly, that's like one of the hardest things, I think, to have those ball skills, have the ability to find the football when it's in the air, know when to turn your head and all that stuff. He seems to have that. So I'm really encouraged. And I think Lane's a good player. He hasn't had a good year, but I think he's a good player. And so we'll get to see if he can step up and sort of be that outside guy. And then again, obviously, hopefully Shedd can be back to full speed, something near it pretty soon here.
Danny, you mentioning that about, you know, touching the ball reminds me that, you know, the play Sherman made against Fitzgerald when he was lined up in the slot and went across the field and Stanton, I think it was like a secondary option, but came back to it late. And it was like Sherman one-on-one and Fitzgerald in space, kind of a very unusual position for him to be in, where he likes to use that sideline is a big, you know, as an extra defender, so to speak, but right, went up and deflected that pass away. That to me was like one of the most impressive plays that Sherman could make. And
yeah,
to see that right before he goes out, it's kind of even all the more disheartening.
Oh man. Well, and I think people lose sight of the fact, like when you're a cornerback, number one, you're reacting to what a receiver is doing. Like they know where they're going, right? Like,
right.
It's so hard to play cornerback. I think people don't realize, I don't think people kind of think about it as much as they need to. Like it is an extremely difficult position to play. I mean, you got a guy running at you full speed, cutting, and he knows where he's going. So yeah, I mean, a a lot of it is, and I think this is what makes Sherman so great. A lot of it is knowing, it's almost like guessing on a pitch. Like as a major league hitter, like you think a curve is coming, so you jump on that curve. And I think a lot of what makes Richard Sherman so good is he understands like route combinations and formations and what that means. And so he can know sort of where the route is going before it happens. I think that's what makes him so good.
Yeah, I mean, so much film study and everything like that. So speaking of the difficulty of playing defense in the NFL on a wide receiver, then an incredible play from the Seahawks star wide receiver, Doug Baldwin. An incredible play by Russell Wilson to extend the play. This is 13-21 in the fourth quarter. When, as Tristan's saying, kind of we're thinking, can the Seahawks move the ball offensively at this point? And Wilson with the classic double spin and finds... Doug Baldwin found a way to win one-on-one and then gets downfield for a 54-yard pickup that sets up the Jimmy Graham second touchdown of the game and doesn't put the game away, but puts the Seahawks in a position where they could, could feel comfortable with their lead.
Yeah, you could feel, I feel like you can feel that play happening. As the second time he spun, I was like, okay, something crazy is going to happen now. Because it was like, the first spin is like, okay, I don't know. Sometimes he throws those away. But the second time he spun, I was like, okay, something's here. And when you watch the replay, it almost looks like he's throwing it away, honestly, because if Baldwin hadn't touched or hadn't jumped for it, like it would have been like way out of bounds, which I guess is the perfect spot to put
right.
it. So yeah, that was an amazing play. Obviously Baldwin did a great job. Like he jumped up and the other guy fell down. So he did something right. And then I don't know if you guys noticed, but like behind him on the replay, you can see Bruce Arians just like collapsing in frustration.
It was amazing.
He's just like, oh my God, you gotta be kidding me.
And Arians is so expressive that with Jim Harbaugh not in the NFL, he's the perfect coach to do that.
Oh man, it was just perfect. And then, of course, Baldwin just accelerated away and he was gone like, a bullet and picked up. He got like down to like the 3 or 4 yard line or whatever it was.
Yeah, nearly.
So that was an amazing play. I mean, just vintage Wilson and obviously a great play by Baldwin.
I just love to think Doug on that play because he's blocking for so much of the play that like going in his mind, he's just thinking, I'm going to be blocking here. And then all of a sudden he makes this amazing catch and is down at the three-yard line. Like in his mind, how he could have visualized that he would be in that situation is so insane to me. It's insane. And then also the post game, they're asking Russell Wilson about that throw. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you were throwing this away. Like it was like a Russell Wilson throwaway where there's somebody in the area. And if they catch it, great.
Right.
But he made it seem as though like it was much more intentional than I think it actually was. But whatever, go with it.
Yeah, it's come out of side dump. Like, I don't know. How much could you see that? You were spun the other direction.
He like saw Doug a few seconds before in that general area.
Right.
And threw it up there.
But I mean, this play won the game for the Seahawks, or at least it kind of sealed the deal. Where everything that happened after that, Arizona moved the ball pretty well on those last few drives. But everything that happened after that meant that they'd have to do that and then some,
Yeah.
So
yeah,
this play was huge. And then capping off with the Jimmy Graham play, who we've kind of already talked about. But this play, I mean, I'm curious to see what the EPA like difference is for this play, but I think it's going to be very big.
Oh yeah. If a 54 yard completion in that scenario. Yeah. I think it will be pretty enormous.
Are plays like this normal for every fan base, or is this just, I feel like it's almost old hat for Seahawks fans now that, oh yeah, there's just a crazy ass play that happened and was an integral part of the game.
Yep. we definitely take for granted. All right, so the last play I had highlighted, once Arizona was trying to move the ball and the Seahawks were in more of a prevent defense, but one thrilling play, 8:10 of the fourth quarter, Deion Jordan comes up with a sack his first NFL game since December 28th, 2014.
That is
And we've
crazy.
Been talking about Jordan for a long time, so how exciting was it to see that actually translate on the field?
And that wasn't, I mean, okay, first of all, I was about to say it wasn't a fluke because it wasn't, but I think it was the backup left tackle actually don't remember. So there's a little bit of a caveat there. But still, I mean, that was a hell of a freaking like bull rush got up under the guy's pads, pushed him into the pocket, basically threw him into the quarterback, and then tackled the guy around his ankles, which I'm actually not sure what the rules are about, like, tackling low, because didn't someone get called for that earlier in the game when they tackled him?
A little bit nervous about it here.
I'm not sure what the actual technical rule is, but that was an amazing, amazing dominant pass rush. And, you know, I'd been talking to some people today during the day about kind of the word on the street is that the team is really excited about Deion Jordan. It makes sense because, I mean, they've kept him around for a while now. Yep. They've been patient with him and, you know, they've talked him up, and I think they're very impressed with the work ethic that he's shown to get back. And, you know, it's obviously been a really long road for him. And Pete Carroll, I think, you know, Pete Carroll loves guys that just, you know, the grit guys that are willing to just like tough it out for longer than everyone else. So I think he's kind of like, you know, he fits that mold. And so I think Pete Carroll's like invested in that. And anyways, it was awesome. It was really cool. If they can get him to be sort of like one of those sub package rushers, that would be huge for them. You know, obviously with Malik McDowell out for probably the year, and we don't really know what's going on with him. And so, you know, just having this finding, it's like finding like a $10 bill in your couch cushions. Like, that's amazing. that could be huge for them.
Yeah. I mean, even though, you know, that one play was against a backup left tackle, the fact that he had a team high 3 quarterback hits in this game, you know, it wasn't just that one play.
That's big. Yeah, that's true. I think, the PFF, Nathan Yonke said something about like it was the best game of his career technically based on like pressure rate. So that's really encouraging. Nice. Yeah. I mean, obviously he flamed out, so he wasn't probably having too many great games early on in his career, but it's obviously a good sign. So that's huge. And he's a lot bigger than he was early in his career.
Right.
It's like playing at like 285 or something like that. So different kind of player.
All right. So to wrap this up, you know, I kind of wanted to get thoughts about what do we think about the rest of the season for the Seahawks, knowing about Richard Sherman's injury, and, you know, how does that change the ceiling for this team? We talked, of course, before the start of the season, right after the Sheldon Richardson trade, and we were pretty optimistic when we made our predictions for the season. Yeah. Where are we at right now, Danny?
That is a great question. I mean, I'm still pretty optimistic about them. I think it's getting to the point where you can't afford many more injuries, though. I feel like that they're like kind of at that boiling point where if they get any more major injuries, it's just going to be too much. But as long if they get lucky, I still think that they have like a core group of really, really talented players that they could go far with. Getting Earl back on the field will be big. I mean, it was pretty sweet to see Cam Chancellor play the way he played today.
Yeah, you haven't mentioned him yet.
Assuming his stinger isn't serious, then that would be, you know, I think getting him kind of going is a big deal for them. And, I mean, I don't know. The offense is like different every game. I never know what to think of the offense, you know, but I don't know. I just think I still think they've got so much talent. I think in a parity driven league where you don't really have any great teams this year, like they still have a pretty good chance. They're 6-3.
And the good news is 3 of basically your 4 most important games left on the schedule, not necessarily most difficult because Jacksonville is probably in there at this point, but 3 of the 4 most important with Atlanta, Philadelphia, and the Rams are at home, with only Dallas at this point, I would put in that in terms of a really important game that's left on the road.
Right. 2 of those are on in primetime too. And I don't know what it is about the CX in primetime, but they seem to play really well in primetime at home. So, I mean, those are 2 really good primetime games, the Falcons and the Eagles at home in primetime. It's going to be fun.
And there's also a decent chance that LA game gets moved to primetime as well, I think, is the Sunday night football game.
Oh, that'd be fun.
But it does make me nervous without Sherman going forward, looking at the quarterbacks who are coming up. And, you know, some teams have, especially this season, there aren't a ton of great quarterbacks out there. And you look at it with Matt Ryan waiting next week, and then Carson Wentz 2 weeks after that, and then even Dak Prescott down the road. There are a lot of very good quarterbacks left on the schedule for the Seahawks who are really going to test the secondary.
Yep.
They need to get their pass rush going. I'm a little bit, I don't know what the word is. It's been weird, mostly, that it hasn't been more dominant, I think. I mean, we've seen it at times been really, really good. And overall, I've been happy with Sheldon Richardson and all that. And I think, you know, obviously losing Cliff Averill has been a factor. But today, it didn't feel like their pass rush was as good as you expect it to be against a line like that. And last week, obviously, when the Redskins were missing like four of their starting offensive linemen, it wasn't as good as you'd hope it was. So definitely. I think that's going to be a big deal. They seem to like, I mean, it's kind of the Seahawks thing. They seem to get better as the year goes on. They start to like figure out how to use the guys right or whatever. I don't know what it is, but I think they need to get that jump started a little bit to have a real chance.
Do you want to wrap up with just venting about Thursday night football?
Yeah, let's do that. That sounds good. Do you want me to just get into that then, or?
Well, we could maybe read this quote from Doug Baldwin. Asked if the injuries in this game are exhibit A of why Thursday night football is tough on players' bodies. Baldwin, it's exhibit A, exhibit B, exhibit C, exhibit D, exhibit Z. Thursday night football should be illegal.
Should be illegal. I mean, he's not wrong, is he? I think it's kind of absurd. I mean, obviously there's a lot of, there's going to be a lot of difficulty to get rid of Thursday night football because there's so much money involved. And obviously I think actually the ratings are pretty good and all that. And so, I mean, I don't know how the hell they're going to get rid of it. I think it's a bargaining chip down the road for them when, right. You know, they go into the new CBA or whatever. But I mean, yeah, like logically it's a terrible idea. Like you're asking guys to go back to play after 4 days rest and their bodies aren't prepared for that. They haven't, you know, recovered. Like guys going through an NFL game get beat to hell, you know? And so we saw that with Sherman. We saw that with so many injuries. I mean, we didn't even talk about it, but like the Cardinals lost, I think they lost three guys for the season tonight.
Yeah.
It's a season ending injuries too. So it's just brutal. I don't know how like closely that's linked, but I think there's a strong correlation with just not being able to get enough rest, not being ready, not having your body ready.
I mean, the more we learn about the importance of rest, and you know, certainly in the NBA, it's been a focus at the league level where they have changed the schedule to try to improve rest and improve player safety, and you know, time for the NFL to follow suit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 100% in favor of getting rid of Thursday night football. I hope it happens. I'm guessing it probably will at some point, but in some manner anyway, like maybe they'll pare it down a little bit or something.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully, as a result, we won't have too many more times like this where we are kind of somber and downcast after a victory. But nonetheless, good to get a win, you know, like, given that it wasn't going to change the injuries anyway if the Seahawks had lost. And thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
Yeah, definitely, guys. And yeah, I mean, it's good to get the win. I guess you got to keep that in mind. And it's kind of crazy that after this season, you know, just how it's gone, that the Seahawks are 6-3. It's actually a pretty good position right now.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening.